Hey there, ready to go back in time again? We're diving deep into Kirkdale, and you know what? It's got a lot more Roman in it than you might think.
Oh, absolutely.
We're not just talking quiet countryside here.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking legions, villas, the whole shebang.
Yeah, it's remarkable how this seemingly quiet corner of the world was caught up in some really big events during the Roman Empire.
So we're using a bunch of different sources.
Yes.
Historical records, what they dug up, even a museum connection to try to put together what life would have been like for, well, your ancestors back in the day.
Exactly. And it really paints a vivid picture.
Okay, so Act 3 of your family history. That's where we're at.
That's right.
Roughly 71 CE to 580 CE.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, trying to find your individual family back then is like, before they really kept good track of things, it's tough.
It's a real challenge, yeah. Before consistent record keeping, it is very difficult to trace individual lineage that far back.
But here's the cool part. The place can tell us a lot.
Absolutely.
About how people live.
Yes. The land itself holds these clues.
It's like a memory embedded in the dirt.
It is. And in the case of Kirkdale, and that memory, well, it's intertwined with Rome deeply.
Okay, so the Romans, they didn't just politely knock and say, hello, we're here, did they?
You're right about that.
How'd that whole Roman takeover thing go down?
Not quietly, that's for sure. I mean, we've got to go back a bit, right? Julius Caesar, he tried to conquer Britain way back in 55 BCE. Didn't go as planned.
Oh.
Fast forward to the first century CE.
Okay.
Roman Empire, it's like a machine now.
On a roll.
Expanding everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Emperor Claudius, he decides, okay, it's time to finish what Caesar started.
Right.
By 43 CE, they've got a good chunk of southern and eastern Britain under their control.
So what about the north, where our Kirkdale is? Did they just skip that part?
No, no, not at all. This was about becoming a global superpower.
Of course.
Which, knowing your interest in history, might resonate with you. But here's where it gets interesting. The north, it wasn't so simple.
Oh.
They were used to dealing with, like, one main power.
Right.
But up north, they run into this group, the Brigantes.
Brigantes, who were they?
Well, that's the thing.
Okay.
Romans, they assume Brigantes. That's one unified group, single leader, you know the drill.
Right, right.
But it's more likely they were, like, a bunch of communities, looser, not so top down.
Oh, interesting.
And that misunderstanding, it really shaped how the Romans went about things early on.
It makes you think, how often do we do that even today? Like make assumptions about people, whole groups based on, I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. All the time.
Like we create these stories in our heads.
Yeah.
And sometimes those stories are totally off.
It's a great point.
And it highlights how important it is to, you know, to try to understand where someone else is coming from.
Their perspective. That's a key.
Yeah.
Speaking of context, Kirkdale, and this wasn't like some far-flung outpost. We're talking about 25 kilometers, that's all. From Eboracum.
Eboracum, that's, wait.
That's present day?
York.
Exactly. That's a big place.
Major city, not exactly the sticks.
Not at all. No, so we're talking about being connected, like on those Roman roads, right?
Oh, absolutely. Eboracum was a hub, and Kirkdale, and it was linked by this road, Thercolesti.
Thercolesti.
Yeah, and that road, that was their lifeline, connected them to all these settlements, trade routes.
And speaking of connections, that makes me think of those Roman villas.
Oh, yes.
You know, those fancy houses.
Right.
And there's one, it's practically right next door to Kirkdale Land, the Bedlam Villa, right?
2 kilometers, that's all.
It's 2 kilometers. Discovered back in the 60s, this villa, it dates back to around 300 CE.
Wow.
Imagine 30 rooms.
30 rooms, wow.
Probably owned by a wealthy Romano-British family.
Living the good life.
It really gives you a sense of, you know, the lifestyle back then.
And there was another one, even closer, right?
There was, yes.
Hovingham, wasn't it?
Yes. Hovingham. And if you can believe it, it might have been even grander than Bedlam.
Really?
The remains suggest something quite impressive.
It really makes you wonder, were they like rivals? Or were they friends, you know, hanging out in their togas by their Roman swimming pools or whatever they had.
Or both, right?
Yeah.
It's fascinating to consider the kind of social dynamics that were at play.
And then there's that amazing find, that Roman, whatchamacallit, that purse thing they found.
Oh, you mean the arm purse?
Yes. The arm purse overlooking Farndale.
Remarkable discovery.
It's like something out of Indiana Jones or something.
It really is. From the 2nd or 3rd century CE.
Wow.
Likely belonged to a Roman soldier.
And they found it near a, wait, was it a burial mound?
Yeah, a prehistoric burial mound.
That's crazy, like layers upon layers of history, all right there.
It's a tangible connection to the past.
And get this, you can actually see
You
it.
can, yes.
It's in a museum.
The British Museum, no less.
The British Museum, that's huge. It's like you could reach through time and touch it.
Almost like it.
But, you know, all good things, they come to an end, right? Even empires.
That's
The
right.
Roman Empire was about to hit some, let's call them speed bumps.
They certainly did. By the late 3rd century CE, the Roman Empire, it was feeling the strain.
What was going on? Was it just like internal stuff or was it like external pressure too?
It was a bit of everything, really.
Oh.
Internal struggles, economic woes, and then you have these new threats popping up all over, especially in the East.
So they're having to spread themselves thin.
Exactly. Resources stretched to the limit. And in Britain, they even resorted to, well, they built a series of fortifications along the coast. We call them the Saxon Shore Forts.
Saxon shore forts? What were those like to keep out tourists?
Not exactly. These were serious defenses, raids, invasions, all coming from across the North Sea.
So it's starting to unravel like a, I don't know, like one of those really complicated string art things. One string goes and then,
It all starts to come undone.
yeah, and the economy wasn't doing so hot either, huh? Yeah. It wasn't a good time to be emperor, that's for sure.
Not at all. And then boom, 410 CE.
Big year.
That's when everything changes.
Everything changed.
Rome gets sacked, and Britain's basically on its own.
Left to fend for themselves.
Imagine if your family was there in Kirkdale End. What would they be thinking?
I mean, talk about a life-changing event.
The world as they knew it, gone.
It really puts things into perspective, doesn't it?
It does, and we're just getting started.
Oh, there's so much more to come.
Buckle up, folks, because next time we're diving into the world after Rome.
The world after Rome, stay tuned. It's like, you know, when the Romans left, it wasn't just about land up for grabs. It was like this whole
Yeah.
cultural shift, languages, ways of life, everything's changing.
Right, like hitting the reset button on, well, and
Exactly. On
everything.
culture, yeah.
So who are these new folks coming in? You said a melting pot, right?
Well, the big ones, the ones who really made their mark in the long run, the Anglo-Saxons.
Anglo-Saxons, okay. And don't let the name fool you. It wasn't like one big happy family,
Right.
more like a bunch of different groups all lumped together.
From where? Like Germany, that area.
Yeah, what's now Denmark, Northern Germany, Netherlands, that whole region.
So they weren't just like popping over for a holiday, right?
No, this was full-on migration.
Okay, so they come in, they set up shop.
They settle in, and little by little, they start, gaining more and more influence
Taking over.
in a way, yeah.
And we see their, I guess, their fingerprints all over Kirkdale End today.
Oh, absolutely.
In the names of places,
And name
the
it.
things they left
The
behind,
artifacts, yeah.
even the language
The
itself.
language, it all points back to them.
But I'm guessing it wasn't all like happy handshakes and sharing cookies, right?
Yeah, you're right to be skeptical.
Yeah.
There was definitely some, shall we say, friction,
Yeah.
conflict, displacement. It wasn't always pretty.
So what happened to the Romano-British people? The ones who were already there?
Well, it varied. Some, they probably got absorbed into this new Anglo-Saxon society.
Okay.
Others, they might have been pushed out.
Had to flee.
Exactly, had to find a new home.
And some probably fought back.
Oh, absolutely. They wouldn't have just given up without a fight.
It makes you wonder about those individual stories, right?
It does.
Like, what was it like for the people who were actually there witnessing this massive change?
It's fascinating, isn't it, to think about how they navigated such a pivotal moment in history.
Yeah.
It makes you realize that, empires might rise and fall,
Right.
but the impact on the everyday people, the ones who live through those changes,
Yeah.
that echoes through generations.
That's powerful.
It is.
So what about like the Romans, the ones who are living it up in their villas?
Right.
Did they just disappear?
It's a bit of a mystery, to be honest. We
Okay.
don't have all the answers, but we can make some educated guesses.
Okay.
Some probably did blend in, adopted the Anglo-Saxon ways.
To survive.
Exactly. It was probably a matter of survival.
Others might have gone somewhere else in Britain.
That's possible.
Maybe even hopped on a boat, went back to mainland Europe.
It's not impossible.
Right, like things are getting weird here. I'm out of here. Back
Exactly.
to Rome.
We know that the connections between Britain and the continent, they didn't just vanish when Rome did
Right.
trade, migration, even the occasional squabble.
Yep, go.
It all carried on just in new and interesting
So
ways.
even though the Roman Empire was gone, its legacy, in a way, continued.
Oh, absolutely. The Roman influence, it didn't disappear overnight.
Like their roads.
The roads.
Towns they built.
Towns, legal systems, administrative structures.
Those things stuck around.
They did in some form or another.
So new landlords, new rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was life like for, let's say, your family under this new Anglo-Saxon rule?
Well, it was a bit of a mixed bag, really.
How so?
The Anglo-Saxons, they were practical.
Okay.
If something worked, they kept it.
Utilitarian.
Exactly. So they held on to some Roman practices, like their approach to farming.
Makes sense.
And infrastructure.
Why reinvent the wheel, right?
Exactly. But they also brought their own flavor to the mix.
Right. Their own culture, traditions.
Exactly. Their own unique way of doing things.
Give us a taste of that. Like, what were the Anglo-Saxons all about?
Imagine a world where family is everything.
Okay.
Loyalty to your kin, to your chieftain, that was paramount.
Strong family ties.
Oh, absolutely. And they were skilled warriors, farmers, artisans.
Jacks of all trades.
In a way, yeah, they were deeply connected to the land.
And their ancestors.
Oh, very much so.
What about their homes? I'm not talking about those fancy Roman villas anymore, are we?
Not quite.
No more indoor plumbing.
No, those days were gone.
So what are we picturing?
Picture this. Timber-framed halls.
Okay.
Long rectangular with thatched roofs.
Okay, cozy?
Cozy, yeah. With hearths for warmth, woven tapestries on the walls.
And probably a lot more, shall we say, rustic than those Roman villas.
Definitely a bit more rustic.
But this wasn't a completely isolated existence, was it? Like, they weren't totally cut off from the rest of the world.
No, not at all. Trade was still a lifeline for them.
Of course, they still needed stuff.
Exactly. They needed goods, ideas, and yes, sometimes even people came in from across the North Sea and beyond.
It's like those ships arriving would be carrying a whole world with them.
Oh, absolutely. Laden with exotic goods and news from far-off lands.
It just captures the imagination, doesn't it?
It really does.
And speaking of capturing the imagination, I have a feeling things are about to get interesting on the, let's say, spiritual front.
You're picking up on something big.
Okay, wait on me.
Because as the Anglo-Saxons are settling in, getting comfortable,
right.
A new force is about to sweep across Britain.
And that force is?
Christianity.
All right, so new chapter, new beliefs, right?
Yeah.
This time we're looking at how Christianity came to Kirkdaland. And, well, it's not exactly what you might expect.
It's really interesting when you think about it. You've got the Anglo-Saxons. They've got their own, like, dight-seated beliefs, their pagan traditions.
Right, that's been their whole world.
Exactly. And then Christianity comes along, this new faith spreading from, well, the East, really.
And it's not like everyone just immediately drops everything they've always known
yes.
and embraces this new religion.
No, not at all. It wasn't a simple, okay, we're all Christian now kind of deal.
So how did Christianity even get to, like, this part of Britain, especially after the Roman Empire kind of left things a bit, shall we say, messy?
Right. Well, first off, it's important to remember that Christianity was already in Roman Britain.
Right. Okay.
It had taken root there, but spreading north, well, that took a bit longer.
So how did it happen?
So the story goes, back in 597 CE, Pope Gregory I, he sends this monk, Augustine, down to Kent in the south.
Augustine, that name rings a bell.
Augustine of Canterbury, yeah, he was tasked with converting the Anglo-Saxon king down there.
Okay, so that's down south, but we're talking about Kirkdaland, way up north.
Right, and it wasn't an overnight thing. It took time, about a century, actually, for Christianity to really make its way up there.
A century, wow, so how did it spread that far?
Well, it was a few things. Some kings started to back this new religion, so that helped. And you had these really passionate missionaries spreading the word.
Like traveling salesmen, but for religion.
In a way, yeah. And of course, let's be real. Sometimes there was a bit of, shall we say, encouragement involved.
Right. Not always a peaceful conversion.
Exactly. But one of the biggest factors was the monastery.
The monasteries, okay.
They weren't just places to pray. They were like centers of learning, community hubs. They did it all.
So they were offering something more than just, hey, believe in this new God.
Exactly. Think about it. Life back then, it wasn't easy, and Christianity, it offered comfort, hope for something better after you died, a way to make sense of a world that could be pretty harsh.
And people are looking for answers, looking for something to believe in.
Exactly, and plus, those monasteries, they were like magnets for knowledge, and in a world where knowing stuff equaled power, well, that was a big deal.
Makes sense, knowledge is power, even today.
Absolutely, but I'm guessing people didn't just completely abandon their old beliefs overnight, did they?
People tend to hold on to things that are familiar, even if they're also embracing something new.
Exactly. It's human nature. And we see this blending of old and new, this mix of pagan and Christian traditions. Historians call it syncretism.
Syncretism. Okay, so like a blending of cultures, of beliefs.
Right, like some traditional festivals, they got like a Christian makeover, old customs, but with new meanings attached to them.
So it's less about completely erasing the past and more about like incorporating it into this new reality.
Exactly. And it's not just the beliefs that are changing. The landscape itself is transforming too.
Okay. How so?
Well, you start to see churches popping up all over the place.
Replacing the old temples and shrines.
In a way, yeah. And they were often built using whatever was local, whatever materials they had on hand. Absolutely. And these churches, they become the center of everything. Worship, gatherings, even administration.
They're like the heart of the community.
Exactly. They were more than just buildings. They were these powerful symbols of this new faith taking root, literally changing the landscape of Kirkdale Inn.
It's amazing to think about how this thing, faith, this belief, it can lead to something so real, so lasting.
It really is, and it just goes to show you history isn't just dates and battles and names. It's about these really powerful forces like faith that shape societies, that leave their mark on the very land we're walking on.
It's all connected.
It really is. Right. And the more we learn about our own past, the more we discover these incredible links to these bigger events, to the rise and fall of empires, to the movements that shaped our world.
It's humbling, really, when you think about it.
It is, and it makes you wonder, what will people in the future say about our time? What stories will they tell about us? What will our legacy be?
It's a question worth pondering. And who knows? Maybe the answers are closer than we think. Just waiting to be unearthed. Just like that Roman arm purse overlooking Farndale.
That's a great way to put it.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you for coming along on this journey, this deep dive into your family history.
It's been my pleasure.
It's been fascinating. And until next time, remember, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and who knows what you might discover.
Happy digging!